For the week ending November 16th, 2012, we're talking about Wreck-It Ralph, XCOM, Resident Evil 6, playing a game about bad Amazon reviews, and just introducing the show in general. Welcome to the first level. Hey, this is Cole Ross.
This is Dennis Furia.
And Ben Merkel.
And welcome to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. We're here to talk about, you guessed it, video games in this, our inaugural edition of this new program. Although I guess inaugural does imply new. I have news for you guys. Disney bought the rights to the Don't Tree.
We sold out. Ooh, finally.
Yeah, they're you know, it's like a 7-picture deal, merchandising, lunch boxes, a line of pregnancy tests. Yes, yeah, there we go. Unfortunately,
which really, if you're listening to that, you're going to need a lot of those.
Exactly. I've found, you know, in the mini fan mail that we got before we ended that show, the other show that we did talking about video games, that many people used it to, you know, conceive their children, which is neat. And there are lots of little Coles running around now, more than there were before.
It's our generation's Barry White.
Oh yeah. No, but they,
you know, I heard a quote earlier today that this being November, with Assassin's Creed 3 coming out and Cod Blops 2 coming out, that it's probably going to be one of the lowest months on record for teen pregnancies.
I like that. Although, as a point of order, Cod Blops, you know, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 looks kind of like a Z, so we should refer to it from now on as Cod Blops.
Cod Blobses.
Yep. Bad thing about it, they put the money in a trust for us, the Disney people did. They didn't buy our likeness rights, and we are not to be involved in the project at all. So
it will be infinitely better for it.
Yeah, exactly.
To carry the metaphor through.
Okay, so it's time for the brief. You know, we won't make a point of introducing each one of these segments each time, but since this is the first time you're hearing this, the first time we're doing it, maybe we should lay it out. This is going to be the replacement. Mm-hmm. This is where each of us brings a new story to the table, and we sit down and we rap about it. Right?
Let's start rapping about it.
Let us start rapping. Dennis, what you got?
I've got one that is related to the PlayStation Vita.
Oh.
Which has been much maligned by many and, you know, loved by a certain niche and all that, but they're finally bringing PlayStation Plus to it. And I was just really, really impressed with how strong the lineup was. So I can go through it really quickly here, and then just a couple thoughts on it. These are all free, full games that are available when PlayStation Plus launches on the Vita. And this is, of course, in addition to, I believe, about a library of 12 games available on PS3. But if you sign up for PlayStation Plus and you have a Vita, you know, you'll get Uncharted Golden Abyss for free. You'll get Wipeout 2048 for free. You will get Gravity Rush for free.
Holy crap.
Yeah, you will get Tales from Space Mutant Blobs Attack for free. You will get Jet Set Radio for free, which is launching at the same time PlayStation Plus launches.
Right.
So that's not like it's a game that's been out for, you know, any amount of time. That's a completely... Well, I mean, not a completely new game, but you know what I mean.
That's a decade-old new game.
Yeah, exactly. Had not previously been available on Vita. And then you also get the PSP title, Final Fantasy Tactics, The War of the Lions.
Holy shit.
So there's just, yeah, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games.
Six, count them, 6 video games for free. Like, so for like...
No, well, I mean for $50 a month,
well,
right?
But, no, 50...
Or not a month, but $50 a year.
Wow.
Whew. Man. It's not that good of a service.
Yeah, for real. Jeez.
Yeah, but... I mean, this is doing a sponsored program or whatever you want to call it, right? I'm incredibly impressed by this, and I also think this is something that I more and more I find myself wanting is a curated game experience where, I don't have time to play everything that I would like. And a lot of times I feel like I don't have the time to find all the stuff that I, would rise to the top. And so just to have someone be like, hey, these are the cream of the crop games. So we're going to give them to you. You pay us a monthly fee or a yearly fee, and we will just kind of make automatically available the best games that we think you'll like.
Like not only the best games, like the only playable games, like accepting Little Big Planet on the Vita. Like that's like that being the one standout. Like, whoa, where's that? Where's that? Like if I were to go and buy a Vita today, like all six of those would be things I would get for it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's an interesting thing is, Uncharted, Gravity Rush for sure. And to some extent Wipeout is these are, they could be considered system sellers.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and just as a way to get people to out of the gate, subscribe to this thing. I can't help but look at this with kind of a skeptical eye, though, thinking like, Does this show like a crazy amount of faith on Sony's part in their system in the Vita, which is kind of where they have a lot of eggs. They have a lot of eggs in that basket,
mm-hmm.
A lot of eggs in that back pocket. Well, that's too big for a back pocket. And it's got those sticks. A lot of eggs in that messenger bag.
That's the only practical way. Exactly. We need to bring back the fanny pack. Then the Vita will have a place.
Oh,
are you
man.
With me?
Can I tell you a story?
Sure.
I was slammed against an X-ray machine at the White House.
That's
Go
not
on.
A story. That's just
context.
That's
a fact.
It's the punchline.
I think that's the hook for the story. Yeah.
Let's rip up rewind. It was the year 2000.
Fade to black 3 days earlier.
It was the year 2000. I was in Washington, D.C., OBS. I believe I was 13 years old, and as a tourist and as a video game enthusiast, I was walking about with a fanny pack that contained my Game Boy Color, and I don't think I had any games in it. I think I just had the Metal Gear Solid game for Game Boy in there at the time.
So really, that's all you need.
Exactly right. So we go through the X-ray, and I pull out. The thing here, just kind of like, hey, here's all this, and they see it's a Game Boy, and like the woman who was operating the X-ray like grabbed me by the shoulders and like pushed me against the X-ray machine and said, where are the game chips? I was like, what do you mean game chips? The game chips, the CDs. I was like, I only just have the one. It's inside there. Where are they? It's in the thing. It's in the thing.
And was she auditioning for like a Michael Bay movie or something?
Where's the microfilm? Yes. No.
Was she working out some latent sexual frustration?
I've got no idea. On a 13-year-old boy? Jesus Christ, Dennis. No.
Wherever opportunity strikes. I mean.
Yeah. Jeez. So anyway, that was fanny packs, little bit of a trigger word for me. So I'm going to go rock in a corner now, but no, I guess what I was trying to get in with that is it kind of, is this them coming out and saying like, hey, sales are kind of meh, even though I don't know what the actual sales are, but like, let us really try and give this a shot in the arm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got me on the verge of buying one. So. Hmm. I think that might be enough to get it on my Christmas list.
Never buy first generation hardware.
So I have something to kind of piggyback on this.
Go for it.
Yeah.
I saw a post earlier this week from someone who has PS3 and has the PlayStation Plus membership, and he was saying that he got 8 free games, PS3 games for free for the membership cost.
Yeah.
That he gets as long as he has the membership, and he got Resident Evil 5, Infamous 2, Little Big Planet 2, and Ratchet and Clank all for one.
That's a thing. I mean, I remember us talking about that a while back on the other show, mm-hmm. where we were, like I was saying, like I have a PS3 now, and like this is a way for me to get Little Big Planet 2, and then nothing ever came of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now it's time for you to live up to that promise. No, and I think it's, like I said, it's 12 total games on the PS3 now that you get. Okay. And you're exactly right. As long as you have the membership, you have access to those games.
Wow. Here's the question, though. I mean, is it just one membership? So anybody who owned a PlayStation 3 and then had PlayStation Plus and bought a Vita, when this happens next week, the day after my birthday, do you just get these games? So they just like, does it descend like mana from heaven?
From everything I can tell, yes, absolutely. It's one membership for both versions of Plus.
Oh, wow. That is astonishingly.
It's pretty freaking awesome, right?
That is astonishingly consumer friendly.
From PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. from the racist billboard ad company.
Yeah. From the people who will give your, credit card information away.
Yeah, I'd repress that, but thanks.
Or by omission. Hey, I went in there. I get alerts whenever your information is posted. And I went in and I purged the database, Dennis. That's the kind of friend that I am. I put on my special goggles. I jacked into the internet. Yeah, that's what they call it now. I just went like, yeah, just took it. It's mine now. It's mine, so it can't be theirs or yours.
If I can't have it, no one can.
Exactly. So anyway, moving on to the next story here. This is one that's kind of near and dear to my heart. Apparently, there's going to be a new game in the Mass Effect series.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This was announced this past Friday. So a week ago, by Casey Hudson, from BioWare, BioWare Montreal came out and said that, yeah, we're making a new Mass Effect game that, like Dragon Age 3, is using the Frostbite engine, which is the engine that powers Battlefield 3. So they're really going to be pushing the graphics in this one, which isn't a bad thing. Regarding like how this is going to fit in with the rest of the series or compare with it, the studio director for BioWare Montreal, Yannick Roy, I think that's how you pronounce it, said it'll be very respectful of the heritage built over the course of the first three games, with the original trilogy now concluded and the switch over to a new engine. We are exploring new directions, both on the gameplay and story fronts. You can still expect the pillars the franchise is known for to be fully intact, though, including diverse alien races, a huge galaxy to explore, and, of course, rich cinematic storytelling. So, there you go. That's going to be happening. There's no kind of, like, launch window or story specifics that have been put out, but, yeah.
This has me worried, dude. I cringe because I think of Dragon Age 2.
Did you ever play that?
No, I never got around to playing it, but just from reading about it, from seeing it, it just felt like, and you played it, so you can tell me the final verdict. From what I remember, though, it just, they tried to experiment with it in ways that just really didn't work out that well.
It's funny because they Mass Effectized it, which isn't a bad thing, it's good. They gave it the radio conversations. That's perfectly fine. I thought the characters were really good. Everybody that you had in your party, they were great. It was classic BioWare. It was fantastic. The only thing that history doesn't look kindly upon it for is the fact that every level is the same level. Like the reuse of assets and like the reuse of actual like layouts of the caves and stuff that you go to. Like, it's egregious. And the fact that you spend so much time in that one particular city. And, I think that was, a direct result of the shortened development time on that game. I mean, Dragon Age 1 was in development for 7 years. Like, it was announced right around the same time that, that BioWare put out, Neverwinter Nights, you know, just saying like, hey, we're doing this as a, you know, as kind of a follow-up, kind of a D&D Baldur's Gate kind of thing, but with our own IP. Awesome. Great. We're going to love this. And then it never came out, And then Dragon Age Origins came, and it was pretty good. And then they turned two around in 2 years, you know?
So, which is some games, especially in that genre, they just need more time to marinate.
They do. And, you know, Dragon Age 3 is not going to be coming out until, I think, fall of 2013, something like that. Like, it's going to be next generation.
Oh.
It's going to be like PlayStation 4 and Xbox, whatever they're calling it, Durango. No, that's actually the code name. That's the code name for it. Durango.
For whatever reason, whenever I hear Durango, I just think of a big Dorito. Like in my mind, this console is a cheese laden triangle.
Cooler Ranch, would you say? Nacho cheesier? Yeah, I would say that. You know what it makes me think
Nacho
of?
Nacho cheese.
Canyon Arrow. Yeah, something like that. The SUV from The Simpsons. You know, that one.
I'm with you.
Yeah, you're picking up what I'm putting down. I appreciate it. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's gonna be coming out. And Dragon Age 2 came out in January of 2011. So with this one being delayed into roughly the middle of 2014, that gives them 3 years, you know? And and they know what they did.
Yeah.
Like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, people are going to be like looking and spot checking all the stuff they show to make sure no assets are being reused, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's maybe it's an irrational fear, but I look at the Mass Effect franchise, and they're like, hey, we're going to have a new game, new universe, new characters, and it's like, well, great, but is this a strategy we're going to take it to a, you know, game every year kind of strategy now? Or, you know, it's same way I look at the Star Wars films now. Yeah. I'm like, they're like, yeah, we're gonna have the final trilogy, and then we're gonna have about a movie a year after that, and then we're gonna have another Christmas special, and then we're gonna have
Dennis.
It's just I want to eat George Lucas within an inch of his life,
even though
he's not
like, he doesn't have anything to do with it. Like, it's like nonsensical to like hate
it's,
him anymore.
It's the principle of the thing.
He's done. You can stop fighting that war.
Yeah,
but you know, it's just a matter of you know, they're not Ubisoft. Like, even though they're both Canadian studios, they're not Ubisoft, right? You know, they're like they've got more on their plate, but then, you know, than Assassin's Creed and Just Dance, you know.
is the next generation? When did we stop calling this generation of consoles the next generation of consoles?
I think that change only happens when the next generation comes out. Not the next generation that is this current generation. Just the way things work.
These are still next generation consoles, and they will become last generation consoles, and then there will be a new set of next generation consoles. There's really no current generation.
I think they're current gen right now. I would not refer to PS3s and Xbox 360s as next gen right now, because they've been out for so long.
Yeah, they've been out for, you know, for about 20 years.
Yeah.
But in my mind they've never moved out of that definition. Just as
right.
Just I know it's not accurate, but it's kind of a tag that goes with them.
Well, I mean, almost. Like, this will be really kind of, you know, the litmus test for this will be what happens when the Wii U comes out, aside from like really bad sales. Do people call the Wii U next generation? And then does that cause everything else to cease being next generation? Like, is that the catalyst? I don't remember that thing happening when the Dreamcast came out. You know, yeah. to year, you know, a year before anything else did, or two years rather.
I will say that Wii U will just be current gen along with the PS3 and 360.
Yeah.
It's like
the Wii is going to be Nintendo's like weird college years,
like where they got a lot done, and they were just out there just going into each other, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, you know, PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 studied hard and got their degrees, and the Wii went to Tibet. And it's back now, and it's probably going to get a 2-year degree at a community college through the Wii U, and then they'll all be back on equal footing.
Hey, you know, for like a year until the next one comes out.
Yeah, right.
You know, so you're saying that the Wii U is a non-traditional student?
Basically, yeah.
Okay,
it's playing catch up.
Oh, it's just trying to figure things out. Just, you know, it's just console.
This is a big, complicated world. Wow.
I'm just a console standing in front of a girl asking her to love me.
Oh, man. Hey, Ben, do you have a story?
Well, yeah, I have one thing that I want to piggyback on top of yours, and then I have my own story.
Okay.
So I'll stop piggybacking.
That is perfectly fine.
The piggyback is, speaking of BioWare, this is something that came to my attention, I think, last week sometime. Mass Effect Trilogy coming out for the PS3. So I had not heard about this, so this was news to me. I don't know when they announced this. The Mass Effect Trilogy is already out for PC and 360, so you can pick it up today if you wanted to. So it's all three games bundled into one game. But it's coming out for PS3 on December 4th, so it's still got a couple of weeks before it'll come out.
Didn't they say like Mass Effect 1 would never ever come out for PS3 though?
Yeah, they said that a year ago, but apparently things have changed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. So, I mean, they must have bought the publishing rights back from Microsoft.
Yeah, I assume so. I don't know how I feel. I feel somewhat bittersweet about it because on the one hand, I was kind of looking forward to skipping Mass Effect 1, but we'll see what happens.
My advice for
now
that,
you have no excuse.
My advice for that remains the same as my advice for Dragon Age 1.
Which is?
Put the difficulty down to easy and coast on by, my friend, because all you're there for is the dialogue.
I guess so.
There's so no shame in that.
Maybe that's how I'll do it. And then the story that I brought this week, a somewhat current event. So General Petraeus is kind of a hot name this week in news, since the elections are over and we have nothing else to talk about.
Ben, there's always 2016.
Do you think that hit news outlets before the election and they're like, no, save it. We're going to need it.
We're going to need to ration these morsels out so we can manufacture more controversy to rile people up and get ratings.
But something I thought was interesting is his likeness is in the game Codblops 2, which just came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm. What did I say?
What did you say?
Codblops.
Yeah. Is that because the 2 program looks like a Z?
You betcha.
Okay. Okay. Codblops. We can't call it Codblops 2?
No. All right. We can't.
All right.
It's going to be like the anti-disestablishmentarianism of video game acronyms by the time we're through with it.
What? It's going to be a word that everybody pretends they know the meaning to and pretends to know how to spell?
I think the meaning of the word is it's the longest word in the.
No, it's not. Like, there's one that's longer, but I forget what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a form of like lung cancer you get from breathing in volcano or something.
Oh, man. So Petraeus, man, like this, I know that these companies like need to do research and stuff. Like, did you see that thing about about a bunch of SEALs being reprimanded for consulting for Medal of Honor Warfighter?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. There were, seven SEALs, not the seventh SEAL, the Bergman film. But, you know, there were seven SEALs, the Navy people, not the aquatic animals, nor the singer with the skin problem. There were seven Navy SEALs who came forward to, you know, give details about certain operations and the way that the SEALs do things. And kind of like that, what is it? No Easy Day or something like that. That book about the Bin Laden raid. They're like,
oh yeah,
dog. You can't like go and like say this to everybody. So I don't know if they were
proprietary information.
They're giving me money for it.
I know, right? You know, why do you hate our troops? Why don't you want them to get paid, America? No. But there's also like a bunch of weird stuff. Like, didn't Oliver North consult on a couple of games too? like noted war criminal Oliver North. I really think he did. He consulted on like Homeland or something like that.
Homefront.
There we go. Yeah. Homefront.
Huh?
Yeah. No? I may be lying. A lot of these games are pretty much the same.
Yeah, basically. What's you said Petraeus, his likeness is actually in the game, though.
Yes. His likeness is in the game.
So is he a character?
Yes.
Okay.
He is playing the Secretary of Defense in the game.
He's not subtle about his ambitions.
And Cod Blops, that takes place in the near future.
Yes.
Hey, he should have some hope. He's going to be vindicated for this affair.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe
the public will re-embrace him.
So, well, if we've learned anything from Bill Clinton, it's that, you know, screwing someone is far, far, far from the death here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's funny. Like, just so did he consent to that? Like, did he come in and voice himself? I don't know. There's so many questions that I have. Oh, man. Military.
I'll send you a link to the news story.
Okay. The Grind. So this is The Grind, where we talk about games and culture that we have been taking in, etc. I would like to, at the start, kind of talk about something that all three of us enjoyed over this past weekend, because it is very, video game related, which was the Disney film, Wreck-It Ralph.
I'm on a Wreck-It!
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was pretty spot on. You like that?
No, it was good. Yeah. Yeah, starred Steve Brule as Wreck-It Ralph.
You dingus.
I'm trying so hard not to hit the bell. I keep it in front of me because it makes me stronger to not hit it. I thought it was a pretty good movie. How about you guys?
It was better than Skyfall, in my opinion.
Really?
Ooh, wow. High praise.
I've heard good things from people about Skyfall. James Bond watching people die dispassionately aside.
Yeah, that was my complaint with the movie.
Well, I've heard Ben, you're on record as saying it's Daniel Craig's best Bond movie, right?
Of Skyfall? Yeah. I mean, it's on par with the other two. I mean, if it's better, it's not much better, you know. It wasn't that distinct from the other two, but I mean it was well directed, I will say that.
Cool. So. Yeah. Wreck-It Ralph was really well acted, though, I thought, or more precisely, well cast. Like, you don't see like a cast full of character actors succeed like that. Mm-hmm. even Toy Story, it's like, okay, we'll have like Tim Allen and Jim Varney and stuff like that, but we have Tom fucking Hanks here.
Yeah, so, carrying the plot on his back.
Exactly. Like Atlas, that man is. But you know, this one, I mean, you're talking about Jane Lynch, you're talking about, you know, Mr. Character Actor, I can't call him Steve Brule, John C. Reilly. You've also got, like, you know, Kenneth Brayer, who is like the one notiest of the one note character actors, delightful though he may be, playing like perfectly to his type as the do-gooder Fix-It Felix Junior or whatever, and then Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, see, I thought Sarah Silverman is definitely a character actor, but I thought, John C. Reilly, right?
John C. Reilly, yes.
Yeah, sorry, for some reason I was blanking on the name. John. I thought he's a character actor in a lot of movies, that the he plays Wreck-It Ralph. He was remarkably well rounded and just, you know, a very three dimensional character.
although we did not see it in 3D,
we only saw it in D, as it said on the ticket.
That's what it did. Yeah. he John C. Reilly plays like a big dumb goof really well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. And I think that was the thing, though, is, you know, it wasn't just big dumb goof, but that, I mean, that's the Pixar story in all of us. But yeah. I almost lost it at several beats in the story. It is just overall really, really good.
Yeah. And you know, like, I won't lie to you. Like, I kind of went into it, like, you know, looking solely for the video game homages. Like, I want to see Bowser in a Disney movie. Like, that'll be pretty cool. But like most of that stuff was pretty much like in the first half, and like the second half was like, okay, we're going to leave that stuff aside and we're going to go into this, you know, one particular world
narrative. And, yeah.
Into this one like fictitious game. Right. And, you know, it held up pretty well, but you have to admit like those like little Easter eggs, they were pretty cool.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like, and even like Jack, the references that were, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say Jack McBrayer speaking Q-bert.
Q-bertese, yeah.
That, or even the references outside of video games. Like, there's some point where he's talking about his medal that he's trying to get. And he's like, it's mine. I got it. It's precious to me.
And it's like, ah. Yep. Hop. I get that. Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason what made it such a strong movie is like they didn't rely solely on video game references to carry the entire story through. They established their own settings, and the entire second half of the movie was devoted to their story that they created. It wasn't dependent upon video game references.
Yeah. And I think like this movie itself speaks to kind of a larger trend, which I believe what's his name? Gabe from Penny Arcade called the daddening of video games.
Oh,
Like, I think it was in a blog post around the time that Heavy Rain came out, as like, you know, a game that, you know, talked about fatherhood, you know, more than other games before it did. Mm-hmm. And just the idea of, you know, the gaming demographic getting a little bit older. You know, most people who grew up playing video games have kids now, and they're sharing that experience with their kids, you know. And yeah. I couldn't help but notice, you know, we were in a theater with a lot of kids. You know, it was a Saturday afternoon, and we were at a children's movie, so I was willing to permit them to be there. but you know, the fact that like they were laughing when Pac-Man was on the screen or something like that, you know, it's kind of like, oh, okay, so these are like nerd kids being raised by nerd parents to like know what this shit is, even though it was put out literally 30 years before they were born.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also
noticed
that, which
is kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
I also noticed that we were laughing more than the kids were at the during the movie.
Yeah, we were. Who are those like weird 25-year-olds sitting up at the front row? Yeah.
Well, I thought it was interesting. So I was on the end of our little group of three, and I was sitting right next to a little kid, and it actually enhanced the experience for me to watch this having the reactions from the kid out of the corner of my eye, because you could see him like, you know, light up when Bowser was on the screen, or, you know, he recognized that. And that was, like you said, Pac-Man came on, he recognized that. But also just to watch him get so like nervous and engaged in the scary parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, he was literally like curling up in his seat and pressing back into the cushion because he was scared and generally concerned and all this stuff. It helped the experience for me. Just it was interesting to see.
I got that feeling from watching Cole as well.
it was a relative. There were some intense parts. Especially, I don't want to spoil anything. I just there are these animated movies that, like, you know, you go back and look at them and just kind of like, oh, that's a bright, happy, goofy movie. But then you realize, oh wait, every single Toy Story has made me cry.
Yeah,
you know, like, wait a minute. Like, if you think about it, like, Toy Story 3 is about the Holocaust, you know? So it's, you know, just kind of like, this is stuff that's made for everybody.
Man, I need to see Toy Story 3.
Do it.
I had some misaligned perceptions about the movie.
It's super good. It's Schindler's Gift List. It's pretty cool if you look at it under that particular guise. But yeah, Wreck-It Ralph, pretty good. Any final thoughts on that before we move on?
It had a Metal Gear Solid reference, so I was really happy about that.
I think it, the daddening of games is one thing that the movie did extremely well. I think the other thing that it did extremely well was have stuff both for the dads and for the kids, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just this, you know, ode to what it's, you know, at its core, it was a father-daughter story, I think, even though it wasn't a true father-daughter. That's kind of that's where it went. But it also, you know, they had the stinko brain and the funny slapstick humor in there for the kids. Mm-hmm. But there were also these kind of sly references and really good story beats to keep the adults engaged. And I really love to see that in movies, that family entertainment doesn't mean that everything is dumbed down and somehow I'm trying to Brady Bunched or whatever you want to call it. It's it just means that it truly does have something to offer everyone without compromising. And I think Wreck-It Ralph did that really well.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some video games if we're ready to go into that.
I think that should factor in the podcast somehow.
At some point. Is there any new business, by which I mean games that have come out fairly recently that people have been playing?
I'd like to go first because I only have a small little bite-sized game.
Cool, go ahead.
And it's funny because you mentioned Frostbite before. I played Battlefield 3 earlier this week for the first time ever. And it wasn't – I had not purchased it. I played it at a friend's house, but I really dug it. I would say that it is went in the direction that the Call of Duty franchise should have gone in. It is the sequel that I was looking for after Modern Warfare 2.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to commit to buying it or not. I don't know if I want to drain that much time into shooting things again, especially with so many other good games out right now that I'm probably more interested in.
Yeah.
But I will say I was very impressed by it. The sound is impressive. All the choices they make are going in the aim of making it an accurate and high fidelity experience to what you would actually feel if you were going through a battlefield. And I feel like that's the same thing that Modern Warfare 2 was going for. And so So I was really happy with my experience. I wasn't all that great. I definitely had more deaths than I did kills, but
spent a lot of time on your side looking at your hand.
Yeah. A lot of times falling over. I felt like my character was drunk. So. But yeah, no, it was a very good experience. So have you guys played this game at all or?
Oh yeah, I own it. So if you do decide to buy it, let me know and we can Battlefield together. I think you talk about the sound. The very first thing I did to test out my my new sound system was to put in Battlefield 3.
Nice.
And play a couple rounds with it just cranked, and it's wall shaking. It's amazing.
Yeah.
They design it really, really well to immerse you way.
You homeowners with your private space and your ability to – you make me sick.
Come to the dark side. You can come over and get a taste of it every now and again. But I think the other thing that interests me is you talk about that being the direction that Modern Warfare 2 should have gone. And I find that really interesting because I see the two as incredibly different games, like that almost have nothing in common. In that, I think of Modern Warfare as almost an arcade experience where everything happens so fast. It's completely twitchy. There's point values flashing up on the screen. I know it's got the realistic graphics and all the weapons are from real life and everything, but really I think of it as an extremely arcadey experience. Whereas Battlefield 3 feels to me slowed down to almost the nth degree. And like you said, trying to be as much of a simulation as possible while still being a game, first and foremost.
Yeah, I guess I didn't notice that big of a difference in pacing. So perhaps I would need to play it more to get a better thought on that.
What type of game were you playing?
Pretty much deathmatch exclusively.
Shooting
the other team, sort of thing. But
that's Battlefield really, really shines. In what was called the Gold Rush mode, I forget what it's called now, but it's where one team is designated offense, one team is designated defense,
and they have to capture areas.
Yeah, that's where it really shines.
I think I played one of those game of that with a tank, but
with a tank.
the reason why I draw the parallel is because the thing I'm contrasting it to is COD Blops. And COD Blobs.
Yes.
and basically every iteration of Call of Duty after that, just where like the mentality is, what gun would be really cool, or what experience would be really cool looking, or what set piece could we play the Rolling Stones to? You know, like those are the type of game design questions that they're asking. And it's like really, I don't know, not interesting, you know, like it's kind of id sort of warfare. Whereas, I mean, I see what I feel like with Battlefield 3 and with Modern Warfare 2, they're trying to give you an honest look into what it's like and as far as a warfare setting. And they're going for accuracy. And I think that that's that should be much more prized than trying to create like a badass experience, if you will. Yeah. And so like so with Battlefield 3, how you mentioned immersion, like all the maps kind of are designed for immersion, where you might be on one square fighting one another, but if you look beyond in any direction, there's something happening in every direction, you know, whether it's a city being sieged or, you know, something on fire, or, you know. So, I mean, the map itself is interesting without any of the gunfight by itself. You could just spend time looking around and it's really interesting. But then on top of that, all the guns are supposed to be very realistic in the sense that they have bullet drop, where you have to aim above the person you're shooting at so that the bullet will drop and hit them, depending upon, you know, how far away you are and what gun you're using.
Just making me even worse at sniping.
Yeah, it adds a wrinkle to it for sure. But also the fact that they have destructible environments where, you know, if somebody shoots a rocket launcher at a wall, you know, the wall will take some damage and adjust to that, you know. And I think that definitely makes the experience more interesting, the same way that in Modern Warfare 2 they didn't have houses or anything that were destructible, but cars were destructible, transformers were destructible. There were a lot of interactable things in the environment, and I think that's how it is in Battlefield 3 as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Let me know. One warning, stay away from the campaign. You're going to be tempted. You're going to say, I'm going to play it on easy and I'll just breeze through. Stay away from the campaign.
Don't touch the stove.
Yeah.
The stove. Yeah. So anyway, so that's the only game that I've played this last week. It's really interesting. Don't know if I'll pick it up or not. I have my sights kind of set on Assassin's Creed 3, surprisingly.
Oh, wow.
I know. For as much as I've spoken against Assassin's Creed 2, from what I've read and seen about Assassin's Creed 3, it looks pretty good. So I might go for that, maybe.
Pro tip, man. Day after Thanksgiving always drops to $35 at the Best Buy.
Okay. I will keep that in mind.
Worked for me on the past 3 Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Revelations.
Brotherhood.
Is it Brotherhood or is it Broho?
We called it Ass Creed Brohood.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then Assassin's Creed 2 itself. Yeah.
All right. I will keep that in mind. But cool. Yeah. So what have you guys been grinding on?
Please don't say that. Anywho. Dennis, you been playing anything new?
Yeah. So I've picked up 2 new games, and then I'll spend just a little bit of time on one that I've been playing quite a lot. I downloaded the demo for XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Oh, you were talking about this.
Yes, it is phenomenal. All, you know, 15 minutes that I played of it. when I say 15 minutes, I mean probably about an hour and a half for what should have been 15 minutes. I have this weird relationship with turn-based strategy games where every second that the game allows me to take making a decision, I will take. So, you know, XCOM doesn't give you any sort of time limit to make your decisions. It's completely turn-based. So I sat there and pulled out every possible strategy and thought through all the options on what was essentially the tutorial level. But damn it, I got all my men through. And
no man left behind.
That's right. I really think I've got a soft spot in my heart for this kind of game, the turn-based strategy.
What other games in the genre have you played? Have you been a fan of?
That's the thing is I really feel like I have very limited exposure, but I know I like it a lot. So the two that I can think of would be what is the name of it? It's the Atlas game. I only played a little bit of it. It's like a PS1 game.
Vandal Hearts.
no. Shit. All right, I'm blanking on that one. But the other one, and this is kind of an RPG, but Final Fantasy X, where the entire, it wasn't an active time system; it was a totally turn-based system.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that.
Is it turn-based strategy or is it real-time strategy? Like,
no, it's turn-based strategy in kind of the view, the way you interact with it is what you would expect out of a real-time strategy game, where you're kind of at that kind of overhead view, looking
God perspective.
Yeah. And you're moving around your units, although I think you're always limited to a team of four, which makes it manageable, because in the games where you're managing squadrons and squadrons of units, I tend to get a little overwhelmed. But you kind of for each unit has a certain number of actions they can take, and then their turn is done. And then the enemy gets to do all their moves. So essentially you kind of decide how to spend your actions, and then the enemy makes their moves, and you progress forward in that manner. But there's just, it's got a great atmosphere to it, in that, the idea is to kind of simulate what would happen if aliens invaded, and kind of recreate that sense of being outmanned and overpowered, and kind of having panic spreading and forcing you to make tough decisions, where really you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I think the game sets that atmosphere very, very well. At the same time, giving you all the time you need to think through those decisions.
Right.
Which is so nice.
Which gives more weight to them, honestly. Like, if you're just making a decision, in the heat of the moment, you can kind of write off whatever happens with it. It's kind of like, oh, I was panicked. But if you're given time to think about it and it goes bad, mm-hmm. you have a lot more like reason to beat yourself up because you didn't think it through.
Yeah, I think it says something about the game. Like, I've heard just kind of hearing about the game through various channels that it is definitely slanted towards a very, very difficult experience, and that like even the easy mode is too difficult, so they're actually going to patch it to make the easy mode easier. Which for those who are just joining this group. I love to play on the hardest difficulty available. Like, that's, I just enjoy doing that.
Like,
so that kind of caught my attention.
Let's be fair, Dennis. You don't only enjoy playing on the hardest difficulty available. You like getting every trophy associated with doing every single thing in these games.
And I just like the feeling of just despising you guys for not. I think
that's that's called superiority.
I just love feeling better than you.
You clods.
No, but I think it says something about a game when in the actual tutorial, every single one of your squad members but one dies.
Right.
And that's just unavoidable.
Did this demo have any of the like the world map, like managing different countries level of panic kind of stuff?
Only at the most basic level. So it gave you one decision. It was like, hey, look, we've gotten two calls for help. One's in China, one's in the US, and you can only respond to one.
See, that's where I would like lose my shit is, on that screen, trying to like manage, the world itself. The battles themselves would almost be secondary.
Yeah. Everyone like me. Everyone be happy.
Please. Everybody like this podcast.
How do you make it through Mass Effect then, Cole?
It's kind of like The Walking Dead. You're never going to make everybody happy,
Yeah.
It's like The Walking Dead or that one Modest Mouse song. Deep cut. So yeah. Man, that's another one. That's on my $40 or less watch.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
one. Oh, no. No, XCOM itself.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah.
So I've also been playing an old PlayStation 1 game, Parasite Eve. Yeah.
I had a question before you bring up your next game. Because I wanted to kind of ask you what – I want to kind of take inventory of all the games that you've beat on the hardest difficulty. Because I can think of a couple, like God of War series.
Yeah, done and, that.
Yeah, which I would have no patience for. And you did this with Uncharted as well, right?
Did it with Uncharted, yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
What other games have you done this with?
I have not done it with Devil May Cry. So that's at least one that I haven't actually. That's sorry. Going back to the brief, they released new difficulty modes, and there's one called Heaven and Hell where enemies die in one hit, but you die in one hit too.
Oh wow!
And then there's one called Hell and Hell where enemies take the normal amount of damage, but you die in one hit. I saw that. I was like, yes.
What game is this for? Is this for the collection?
The new Devil May Cry.
Oh okay, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the first special difficulty mode has like more difficult enemies. The second most special difficulty mode has more enemies and more difficult enemies and more enemies. The third most difficult has both of those, and both you and the enemies die in one hit. And then the fourth and most difficult has all of those things and only you die in one hit.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, that sounds like the opposite of fun.
Sounds awesome.
I feel like games have developed this new like sadomasochist sort of difficulty level ever since Dark Souls came out. Like,
it's not that hard, guys? You guys.
I'm not going to support these games anymore. I don't like that direction of video games.
Can't everybody just have fun?
Modern Warfare and Battlefield, bad company. I did not do the campaign in Battlefield 3 on the hardest difficulty, but Modern Warfare I did on the hardest difficulty, and in both the Bad Company games I did on the hardest difficulty. Pretty much everything, every game that I play, I'll kind of just by default go to the most difficult mode available from the start, and then if I like it, I'll try to play it through again on the hardest difficulty. I really don't. I'm having less and less patience for games that force you to unlock difficulty modes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But for reference, and this will bring up the game that I've played a little more of, that I've played a lot of in the past, Borderlands 2. My intent is the second that I beat the first playthrough, I'm going to go through and do a playthrough without shields.
So you're not even taking choices that the developers give you anymore. You're making your difficult setting.
You're doing challenge runs.
I think that's a ton of fun. I think that it'll be really cool.
God, that's the difference between you and me. Like, I don't even like seek out challenge, and I give up on way more things than you do.
So yeah, I guess looking for different things in games. But yeah, so I've been playing a lot more Borderlands 2. I'm kind of in that final push to the end, but the game is being so freaking good about giving me lots of content that every time I think I'm getting to the final boss or getting to the final area, it's like, oh, and here's this entire new hub with these new areas to explore. I'm like, ah, no, I thought I was done. And then that's happened at least three times now. So, that's kind of impressive. Just that they've, you know, created such a rich and extended experience, but I'm still, you know, I'm in that kind of final stretch mindset where I'm really trying to push through to the end.
I mean, does that bring ending fatigue? Is it like, why won't you die? Kind of thing.
Kind of. And I think it's self-inflicted though, because I want to do every single side quest my first time through. And so if I wanted to, I'm sure I could, you know, go play it and finish it tonight. But there's a bunch of side quests and areas that I want to explore on my first playthrough that'll just require me to invest more time in the game. Once that's done in my subsequent challenge runs, I guess, as you've referred to them, I'll just do mostly the story missions. But right. there's a lot of optional content, which is really cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Borderlands 2. For anyone just joining, go buy and play that game. It's amazing. Love it. And I'm sure this won't be the last time that we talk about it.
No. I still haven't played a lot of it.
Yeah, well, come do a shieldless run with me.
Oh, <God.
laughs> So the final game that I've been playing is an old PlayStation 1 game called Parasite Eve. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting story idea. It's also a really unique battle system. And I won't say much about it here just because I know it's being covered on one of our other podcasts, but I am thoroughly enjoying it so far.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm glad to hear that. Is this your first time playing it?
Yeah, I'd never even heard of it before. So
really? Wow. Okay. Huh.
So it's a pretty cool game.
Yeah. That was the only game that I tried to get my parents to rent for me when it came out. I was, you know, about like 10 or 11 or something like that, but I had sophisticated tastes. And they saw the cover, and they saw the two women on the cover, and one of them was like pregnant with a demon baby or something like that. And they saw that it was rated mature, and like, no. So I had to wait to play it. Yeah.
So. And it's fun. I mean, you know, with it being PS1, everything looks pretty campy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, but you know, if there hadn't been if I didn't have a better point of reference, I'm sure some of the stuff in there would be much more horrifying. So mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, I don't want to say much about it on this show. Just know I'm playing it and thoroughly enjoying it.
Sweet. Everybody else should too. It's a fantastic game, even if you're not playing it for the other podcast, which we'll mention at the end of the show.
Yeah. And it's like $6, so come on.
Yeah, for real. FFR for freaking real. So, anything else from your corner, Dennis?
No, those are the three games I've been playing.
Okay, sweet. I'm going to blow through a couple of iOS games before we get to the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you heard about Curiosity?
Yes.
Yeah.
let's start with this question. At this point, assuming that you've played it, do you have any intention of going back and playing it?
No. No, I do not. Okay. So for people who don't know what Curiosity is, you should really look into it. So you should be more curious about Curiosity. That's the joke. Anyway, no, it's...
I don't know what Curiosity is, so explain it to me.
Okay. It is a game that is developed by 22 Cans, which is the new studio created by former Lionhead dude Peter Molyneux. The objective of the game is for everybody in the entire world to chip away at a cube to get to see what's inside. Okay. This cube has several layers. Each of these layers is made up of billions of little tiles. And, you know, when you join the game, connecting to the server, if you can connect to a server, by the way, you zoom in on a little portion and you tap-a-tap-a-tap-a away at these cubes. It's entirely free. You can buy upgrades, like different picks and different, like, firecrackers and bombs and things like that to clear larger portions of the screen faster. You know, that's in-game currency, but you can also buy that in-game currency with... You guessed it, real life currency.
I wonder how much he's made on it already.
No, it's actually really bad. They're like begging for money on PayPal, like on their website to keep the servers running. Because, like I said, nobody can connect to the servers. Like, I picked it up, you know, it was like, you know, connecting, failed. Okay, put it down, pick it up again. Trying a bunch of times, and I got in, and like I've been, you know, I play with my iPad in bed before I go to sleep, and I'm just, I'll do a little bit of this, you know, just, you know, to say that I did, to talk about it for the show, and just like nothing doing, man. But like the premise, you know, the premise is that like even though everybody chips away at this cube and gets rid of all the layers and stuff like that, only the person who like clicks the last tile of the cube gets to see what's inside of it. Huh. And they can do whatever they want with that information. I think they get sent a link or something like that to what they decide to share. And if they want to keep it all to their lonesome, they can do it. Or if they want to share it on social networking, that's perfectly fine. The only thing that they can't do is sell it.
Oh. Mm. How long do you think until this is hacked?
I'm pretty sure there's somebody who's like, you know, somebody like the Carnegie Mellon, like Human Interaction Lab has made some kind of crazy machine that looks like something out of Blade Runner that just, just presses the screen with capacitive styluses until, you know, just like, okay, everything's clear. And then let's scan it over. Everything's clear. You know, they encourage people to do whatever they can. But I haven't talked about the game itself. It's popping bubble wrap is what it is. It has like nice soothing music in the background, and you see these little tiny tiles that are just a tiny bit askew and sticking out, and it's kind of like, oh, I need to get rid of those. And so you're, you know, and then you clear a section, then you clear another section, then you go around to your apartment and you vacuum a couple of times and you wipe down the counters with Lysol. Then you just kind of, you know, hunker down in your bathtub while you, you know, pluck out your eyelashes. Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Do you think inside the cube's going to be all of his unfulfilled promises in the Fable franchises?
Okay, so you see, inside the cube, all those trees that people could have grown in Fable, you know, by planting it in their right. childhood and coming back to it, that's where all those trees are. And Milo's there. I was going to say
Obama's
and...
Kenyan birth certificate.
What?
I said I was going to say Obama's Kenyan birth certificate.
Anyway, Angry Birds Star Wars, surprisingly not a bum slop.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
Bum slop?
That's an Adventure Time thing. Don't worry about it.
Which season?
That is 3. Maybe 4. Just, I forget.
Just finished season 2.
Okay. Oh, you're about to get the lemon grab. Sorry. You're going to have to put up with that for me for a while. No. But yeah, Angry Birds Star Wars. I mean, I've not liked, you know, Angry Birds, like even when it was, you know, relatively small and Rovio was, you know, not making t-shirts and mouse pads and selling them at Walmart with their characters on it. Like it felt a little bit too like random to me. Like you just fling this thing and you have like a little bit of control over where it goes, but you know, like, okay, he hit this thing, but he bounced in this weird way and it didn't fall over. Mm-hmm. And you know, now this pig is protected by like 15 layers of rubble and I have to restart and the powers didn't really work or whatever. But like, I like the presentation. That's okay. You know, the graphics, mm-hmm. it's pretty charming. But, when you take this and you put it in the Star Wars universe, that presentation value gets like upped for me, in a way that I couldn't have expected before. And also the powers are very, very well considered, I think. So like the two that I've seen so far, you get Obi-Wan Kenobi, like it follows the original trilogy, which is well advised, I think.
Oh, and so there's actually like a story to this one?
Think like Lego Star Wars, how they tell the story in like crazy little cutscenes. This does it in okay. Angry Birds, like comic book panels. And, okay, you know, the birds are the rebels and the pigs are the empire. But, like, it goes from movie to movie. So the first set of levels are Tatooine. And, like, you start out, like, your basic bird is Luke. And then you meet Obi-Wan Kenobi, who has, like, force push. So as he's flying, like, over something or around it, you can press in like a direction of something you would like to knock over and does a force push to like kind of like give it a little bit of a nudge. And then halfway through the first set of levels, the bird Luke, gets his lightsaber. And so as you're flying towards these barricades and they, you know, the levels change at this point because like, okay, we're going to give you bird Lukes. And you can actually cut down obstacles as you're flying by them. So there's this element of timing that's brought into it as well. And yeah, it's pretty freaking sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. That's
I always found Angry Birds just completely infuriating. Yeah. For the reasons you laid out at the beginning. Like that just made it a complete non-starter for me.
I mean, I figured it was like enough of a like, okay, if you're going to try this hard to pander to me, I can give you 99 cents and not buy a Coke Zero today. Yeah. So, you know, so it's like, okay, you know, one thing's one thing and the other thing's another thing. And if not, I can just delete it from my phone and, you know, I'm only, you know, 99 cents poorer. So it's got my time. It's got our time on the show. Check it out, especially if you've been skeptical about the game in the past. I know that I have, and it's enough to get me curious about it.
But, so you're saying you have curiosity?
Yes.
That's what's at the center of the cube is Angry Birds Star Wars.
Oh, great. That is a great cross promotion. If you have an Angry Birds game on your iPhone, when you launch Curiosity, it gives you a certain number of birds that you can fling at the side of the cube to knock tiles away. Synergy.
Or no, it's Angry Birds episode, Angry Birds Star Wars episode 7. That's what's at the center.
funny. So anyway, moving on to games that are not on phones.
to real games.
to the real video games. Am I right, fellas? oh, man, we're a bunch of dudes.
Yeah. So, I hope. I think, at least.
You know.
Fairly certain.
So, anyway, been playing since we last convened in our private talks. I have beaten Virtue's Last Reward, the Zero Escape game for the 3DS. And that is really good. It's a visual novel slash Escape the Room game for the 3DS. It is the direct sequel to 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, one of my favorite games of the past 5 years or so, along with Dark Souls and all these other things people are really, really tired of me talking about. it's one of those weird kind of situations where I can't say very much about it without spoiling it. Like, even the mechanics itself, like, to say that the game branches plot, like, okay, you expect that in a visual novel slash adventure type game, but, like, to say what it does with that at the very end and, like, the way it works in, you know, into the narrative, even saying it's a part of the narrative, that spoils it, like crazy. But I will say the characters are pretty good. You get to, you know, you get to come over, you know, you get over how anime they are, which is as hell. They're anime as hell. One of them's dressed up like a circus ringleader. The other one is apparently some kind of Egyptian goddess who is wearing only this like big golden ring that barely covers her nipples. Fellas.
well, this just went to the top of my list.
Well, there's a girl who has pink hair. It's all voice acted, and quite frankly, the voice acting is not an abortion. In fact, it's all really, really good. Not an abortion in the sense of like a baby being killed, but an abortion in the sense of like, yeah, we phoned it in and this thing is just awful. So, you know, it's really good. The presentation is great. It's fantastic. I mean, and the thing is, like, it's about like 35 hours long in comparison to like 9 hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors being like 15. Mm-hmm. Like, this takes everything about that game and like cranks it to 11.
But you said you beat it, right?
Yes, yes.
So that's the real problem is, aren't now you're like fresh out of story games like this, right?
You know, I tend to like go through cycles on these. Like, I'll go back and play through like a Phoenix Wright game, or you know, just something like that. Depending, usually it's like the time of the year, honestly. That determines when I play them.
I forgot. I picked up. I started playing Phoenix Wright again.
Oh, cool! Nice on your on your e-phone.
Yes. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
As they say in España.
So good.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's right. My time is up.
No. Yeah, I just play a little bit more. Like get towards the end and let me know what you think. It's a 7-year-old game, so we can talk about it. Sure. And with relative abandon. Although everybody, like, you can go buy this game, it's like $5. You don't have to hunt it down on DS anymore. It's a known thing. The final game that I've been playing, if you don't have any more questions about Virtue's Last Rewards, buy it to make sure that they make the sequel that they promise, because I want it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you haven't played 9 Windows, 9 Hours, 9 Doors, is there any point in going to Virtue's Last Reward?
There are plot payoffs that really, really ring true if you know the elements that are carried forward from one to the other. And I would say that 999 is relatively easy enough to get a hold of. Like, if you have a 3DS, you can play DS games on it, and it doesn't look as much like ass as I expected it to. It's not like you're playing it. I mean, it's not as good as playing it on a DS Lite, but you know, you're going to get it across. So I would say, like, playing the first one to wet your whistle and really get into it. Granted, that's like me asking you to watch 7 movies. You know, but yeah. Ben, did you have something you wanted to say?
No.
Attaboy. All right. I heard you inhale sharply as though to interject something. So.
No, I forgot to breathe. Okay. And so I realized that I needed to do that. Yeah.
Cool. Final game that I'm going to talk about today, because we are going a little long, although, you know, this is a new format. We can let it breathe if we want to. Nobody's stopping us. Don't hit the
sleep,
stop button.
Sleep deprivation, mate.
Don't hit the stop button,
yeah,
please.
Don't pause us, please.
Hey, if we go to midnight, we can wish Ben a happy birthday.
Oh, he remembered.
Yes, I did. So, anywho, looking at Resident Evil 6.
I'm interested in this.
Yeah. So,
Sounds like you finally got to the part.
No, it's not even that. Like, I haven't even gotten very far into it. Go ahead.
Did it stop being like Resident Evil 4 and start being like Resident Evil 5?
It never was very much like either of those two games. It's kind of its own thing. Okay. You know, they've taken huge steps forward. There we go. With this game vis-a-vis the controls as regards, just the general atmosphere and your ability to navigate the world. So that is good. It plays very, very well. And I don't even have complaints about the story yet. I'm curious to see what's behind all of this, especially since Wesker is no longer in play. And I've seen some things that are kind of like, whoa, if this pays off like I think it's going to be pretty sweet. So like that aspect of it is pretty cool. However, I thought that the inventory management was simpler than it turned out to be. And the way that they did it, A, has very little to no explanation. And B, like if you don't like poke around and look at it, will make things really, really hard for you. So I'm walking around thinking, holy crap, like I have no healing items and I have no ammo. And for some reason, whenever I come across healing items or ammo, I can't pick them up. Right? So the way that it works is the weapons that you pick up don't take up inventory space. Right?
Yeah.
So that's cool. You know, you can hold as many weapons as you want. However, consumables and ammunition do. Okay? Not a problem with ammunition because, you know, they tend to keep you at like a baseline level of ammo. You know, just enough to keep you going while also making you nervous that you might run out and making it so you have to be careful with it and, you know, things like that. And you get grenades and those are pretty useful, especially in Leon's campaign where you have a large number of zombies coming after you. But the problem is with healing items, there's no apparent way to use them until you recognize that you have to go into your inventory, which doesn't pause the game, by the way. It's very much like Resident Evil 5 in that regard. Yeah, you have to go in and every green herb you pick up, you combine it and then you put it into your healing case, which is activated by pressing the right bumper on the Xbox 360 or R1 on the PlayStation 3. So I'm like dying left and right to these, you know, regular enemies, just kind of like I'm just running out of steam because I have no healing items and I cannot pick up any ammunition. So I'm out of health and I'm out of ammo and it's like, what in the hell is happening? So I'm like, okay, before anything, you know, before I trigger the event that causes the zombies to come out, I'm going to like play around with this. And I realize, holy shit, my entire inventory is filled with healing items. So I'm combining them and I'm putting them over, like, this is much better. And so I proceed and it's kind of like, why didn't you explain that ever at all? You know?
Huh?
So that's a bummer for me. Now that I figured it out, I'm proceeding okay. But I have two other problems with it. You know, granted, I said it controls really well and that I'm curious about the story. The first is the game is way too dark.
Not just like in lighting or in tone?
Yes. No, tone is fine. Make it, you know, I see a red door. I want to paint a black baby. Make it as dark as you can, right? But the actual visuals, when you're like struggling to discern something, you know, like that's attacking you, like a certain amount of like atmospheric darkness is fine. But even Silent Hill gave you a radius of things that you could see.
Yeah.
You know, even Alan Wake gave you a radius of things you could see. This don't.
I noticed that when I played the demo, I had to turn the brightness way up.
And the problem with that is it washes out the image. Yes. And it's kind of like it looks good when you go for it. But the thing about shadow is you have to have contrast. There has to be a dynamic range,
there
right?
There needs to be light for there to be a shadow.
And there needs to be shadow for there to be light.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that you can have light without shadow.
But there's nothing in the world to cast a shadow, so you actually just have a light void. But what is casting the light if there's nothing inside this void? Sorry, I need to...
42?
I need to stop the peyote.
It's going to be a long week, guys.
Oh, man. You know, people who do peyote, they filter their urine in order to retrieve peyote to do it again. That's a thing.
I do now.
Yep. Same thing with meth.
Smart man's drug right there.
Vision
Keeps
quest.
Your wits about you.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Resident Evil 6, too dark to see anything. The game looks really good. I don't know why they're trying to hide it. It's to the detriment of the difficulty and of me enjoying the game, which is no good. So, you know, kind of a bummer. Other thing.
So if you were playing the game in like a completely dark room theater environment, would it be okay?
No, because I do that. Like I darken the room. You know, I usually play, especially now that the sun sets at 1 p.m.
Yeah, really.
You know, weather jokes. You know, I play in a dark room, and you know, I tend to if I'm not sitting in my recliner, you know, my recliner's about like, you know, 6 feet away from my TV screen. You know, so I'm like right on top of it, and I've got my TV like calibrated to the Dolby standard and everything. So like this is a problem of the game itself. I'm not a fool. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other thing, checkpoints kind of but like if you die, it tends to be really forgiving for you. Like it just, you know, puts you back to the previous sequence or whatever. That's fine, but like it's really really unclear about where it will put you if you turn off the game. So it's like, okay, cool, I solved all these puzzles. It's late. I'm going to, you know, stop the game and then, you know, go to sleep. Come back to it and it drops me like way back at the beginning of this section or this chapter even. It's like, what in the hell you like when I see like checkpoint cleared in the upper left hand screen, like that means no matter what I do, like that's the gate, that's the valve, I can't go back beyond that point. But like you're making me like recover this 15-20 minutes of ground to get back to where I was before I quit your game.
why does anyone get that wrong these days? Like it's beyond my comprehension how you can screw that up. Is there some sort of like processing power requirement programming problem that I don't understand that makes it impossible to have good checkpointing, or are people really just that lazy?
Okay, I think it is a problem of lack of playtesting. You know, there are a lot of things about this game that lack, you know, like if anybody play tested, they would realize I can't see anything. Where am I? Who are you? Who am I? And also, you know,
it induces philosophical questions.
Yeah. If they
like, why the hell am I still playing this game?
Yeah. So there's that. But there's also the idea of like, you know, this might be a concession to the fact that they had to put it online.
Uh-huh.
So like, you know, just counting on like, okay, if you're coming into this you know, like at the very start of the game, like when you sit down to play, you choose like, oh, I want to play for fun, or oh, I want to have like, you know, make this an open game, like make it so it's friends only, make it so it's private, bunch of different things like
oh,
that.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So like they, and then you go through the matchmaking and you bring somebody in. So all that I can think of is they want to make sure that everybody's brought in at the same point, which I guess kind of makes sense. But it's like, you know, if I'm playing it offline and I'm not like doing it as, you know, online co-op, which, you know, is not how I do things. It's not how I roll. Can you like make it so it'll play like if I was playing your game offline like I want to? Like, don't subject me to that limitation just because that's the way it is.
Yeah, and you know 90% of people are playing this alone anyway.
Yeah.
So why not? Why not design it for that?
So I'm curious about the narrative, you know, about the story. I'm curious about the different campaigns. You know, all of that stuff is pretty cool. You know, I understand that the gameplay is varied in a lot of different ways. I haven't fallen off of like the narrative / frustration cliff. I'm bugged by the trend ever since Resident Evil 4 for like the lack of conservation of mass. It's just kind of like, okay, I'm going to shoot this dude, or this person's going to go through this transformation, and all of a sudden they have like a 50-foot long tentacle, and these weird, like, crazy tumors are going to pop out. Like, where did that come from? Like, did you absorb biomass from around you to like to make that?
No, they're just incredibly dense. They each weigh about 3 tons each.
It's like, for real, dog.
That's why they shamble so much.
So that's it.
I can't remember if I asked you this question in the past, but going straight from Resident Evil 5 to Resident Evil 6, is there a noticeable jump in the quality of the graphics? Like, are we still at the point where game-to-game is improving?
It's been about, like, what, 3 years since Resident Evil 5? Yeah, I would say, like, yes, it does look better, I think, both from an artistic standpoint. Like, I like the style of it, darkness aside. The character models look better, I think. They're, you know, the facial animations are there, whereas I don't think they were there in RE5. The textures are better, I think. And just, you know, if they saw fit to put lighting in there, or at least in the scenes where they do have lighting, it works really well. Like, if you're running down like a city street where all hell has broken loose and cars are on fire, it looks like a city street where all hell is broken loose and the cars are on fire. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. So it looks good. You know,
Do you have a favorite storyline yet?
I'm only on Leon's so far, okay, which I'm enjoying because Hunnigan is great, but that's just me.
Bonus round.
It's bonus round time.
Oh, the bonus round. Okay. So the bonus round, this is pretty cool. If you remember our old program, we liked to play games with each other. And that is going to continue here. This will also be a place for like miscellaneous things to happen. If, you know, we have guests on, stuff like that, that's where this is gonna live. So get ready, fellas. Who brought the game this time? I believe it's you, Ben?
Yes. I did. I'm pretty excited about this. I want to see how it works out. And this works out great that there's two of you guys, because then it'll be a more, I think, even way to play. Okay. So I don't have a name for the – the name that I have for this is Video Game Game. So that's – I don't know if we want to alter that. Or,
by definition?
You spend much time coming up with that, Ben?
No, that's just what I saved the file as, so I'm going to stick with that. Okay, so...
VG squared. Boom.
We could do that. Okay, yeah, so the point of this game, the way this is going to work, we're going to do it golfer style based on who goes first and who goes second. But what's going to happen is I'm going to say a quote of a person reviewing a video game. So these are from reviews from The Forest, from Amazon.com. and these are bad reviews of good games.
Okay.
So these are reviews of people who did not quite see the goodness in the game. So this is their take on it. So you have to try and pick out what game it is from the review. So the way it's going to go is, since there's just two of you, we'll start off maybe with a coin toss. One of you will go first, and based on who has the higher score, they will be the first person to guess it, and then the second person will say second. So you can just kind of match the other person if you want, or you can kind of guess
okay,
a different one. Okay, sound good? So we'll play golf rules based on who goes first and who goes second. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I think we should determine who goes first by picking a number between 1 and 10.
Okay. I have it. I have a number in mind. So.
Okay. Dennis?
6.
Cole?
Damn it. No, I'm going to say I'm going to say 3.
It was 7.
God damn it. I always pick 7, and I didn't want to pick 6. I didn't want to Price is Right Dennis. Okay.
Okay. So I guess Dennis has the option of going first or second. You can decide.
I'll go first.
Okay. Oh, okay. What a gentleman. Okay. So we have... We have five different quotes, and then there's a tiebreaker in case it gets to that point.
Okay.
Okay. So Dennis, you're going first?
Yes.
Okay. All these games, by the way, we have all played these games, and these are all... I think we would all agree that these are good games to kind of give you a hint. Okay. So the first quote, if you have a tolerance for vapid dialogue and cliche storylines, then you might like this. That's really all this is, a movie that makes you have to keep clicking things for it to keep going.
Oh, wow.
I have to say Mass Effect 2.
Okay, Cole is going to cry, regain himself, and then he's going to guess what this one is.
I'm going to say Heavy Rain.
Cole is correct. It was Heavy Rain. That's really all it is, a movie that makes you have to keep clicking things for it to keep going. Okay.
Like you can't disagree with him, but you can disagree about whether or not that's a bad thing.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. All right, so Cole is at 1 point, Dennis is at 0 points, so Cole is up first for this question.
Okay.
Okay. As a parent of a 13-year-old, M games are being played a lot by their peers. My son has played a lot of M games for several years. These companies need a clear rating system. And then here's where it gets interesting. This game is filth. It is in many ways worse than Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, wow. In many ways worse than Grand Theft. I mean, like Saints Row the Third, right?
Okay. Dennis, what is your...
That's straight where my mind went. Saints Row the Third.
Okay. You are both correct. So it is now Cole 2 points, Dennis 1 point.
Okay.
All right. Question number three.
Who goes first in this instance?
Cole does. Okay. You do. Since you have more points. All right. That's like the golf rules.
Right? Okay.
Okay, those looking for a relaxing, meditative experience need to find some ambient music and some weed. This is supposed to be a game. It's not.
What?
Would you like me to read it again?
No. Okay, some weed and some ambient music. I'm a fan of ambient music. Don't like the weed so much. I get a sense that I like this game because I like relaxing games. All that comes to mind is Dear Esther.
Journey.
Dennis picks up a point.
Oh, man. Wow. Okay.
I would have accepted Journey, Flower, or Flow. It was written about the trilogy.
Yeah,
itself.
The collection. So,
yes, yes. But you could really say that about any of those games.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so it stands 2-2. Dennis is going first. All right. This game's single player is okay, but kind of repetitive, and the toilet humor isn't even that original. The co-op was awful. It is just a mad dash to loot anything the players can.
That's got to be Borderlands 2.
I can't disagree with Dennis. I mean, all I can think of, like, loot and toilet humor.
Yeah.
All right. You guys are both correct. It was Borderlands 2. So it now stands at 3-3. All right. So
Dennis, I need that tiebreaker.
This is question number five. So if either of you pull ahead here, you will win the game. If it's a tie after this, we will go to the tiebreaker.
Okay.
Okay. There were a few laughs, and it was worth playing, I guess. This was a failed rehash of a masterpiece.
Oh, failed rehash of a masterpiece. I really am blanking on. I'm trying to think of games that we have all played. I got nothing. I'm going to say Ratchet and Clank, A Crack in Time.
Okay.
Portal 2.
Cole.
Oh, it's so obvious. Damn it.
He comes up from behind.
Oh.
Can you do me a favor, Ben, and read the tiebreaker?
I will.
Just as a victory lap?
Sure, yeah. This is a funny one, too. So the tiebreaker question, not that it matters now. It's cool. It's a clear one. It's unpatriotic. The original was set in the middle of American Midwest at a deep underground U.S. government facility. This latest game is set somewhere in Europe and gives us a multi-ethnic love interest. Just put the damn thing back in the U.S. of A.
Half-Life 2.
Yeah, it's Half-Life 2.
But it wasn't set in the Midwest. It was in Arizona.
The American Midwest? That's kind of... I guess, are we the Midwest?
Yes, kind of. We're at the very eastern end of the Midwest, although Cincinnati is basically Appalachia.
I mean, we should be referred to as the Mideast, right? I mean, geographically.
Am I right? These gas prices.
Multiplayer.
I'm going to do a little placeholder thing here for multiplayer, which is our section for listener interaction. Being that this is the first episode and we need to actually have listeners to have listener interaction, we're going to leave this as kind of a blank right now, but we're going to give you discussion questions and you can write in listener mail, all that. That is where this lives. So
it's like none of our listeners can see into the future.
Damn you for being not clairvoyant.
Worst fans ever.
Yeah, you guys fell off.
We really need some clairvoyant fans.
The end boss.
Time for the end boss, which is where we kind of give our final opinions for the week. Something that's on our minds, just a real brief, like, hey, something to chew on until we come back next week. What have we got in our minds, Dennis?
All right, there are two presents that I expect to get for Christmas right now. One is a new microphone, so you should be hearing a drastic upgrade in my voice. The second, as per the beginning, is probably going to be a Vita.
Oh wow, cool, nice. Yeah, so I mean, you're gonna do the PlayStation Plus thing, right?
I'm on that tipping point, man. I think it's, you know, as long as the wife doesn't shut me down, you know, as long as Santa will bring it, I think that's moved to the top of my list. Yeah,
awesome. So, wow,
yeah. I like how we're kid friendly on this podcast.
Yeah, we swear and we, you know, read racist Amazon reviews, but we maintain the myth. Am I right, guys? Right. Yeah.
You we know, still believe.
Yeah, we still believe.
We can still hear that jingle bell.
We believe in something, Lebowski. No, the Vita, it looks really good. If I've been hesitant, it's just because I've wanted a 3DS first. And also because of the the whole first generation hardware kind of thing. I'm hesitant to buy something that's in its first iteration. So
I think the other thing that's pushing me towards a Vita is I'm encountering more and more instances just where, you know, I'm not finding games on my phone really designed well enough to sustain, but I also can't always just have the run of the living room, you know?
Right.
So, like it or not, most of the games I play are shooting and violent, which is kind of hard to just kind of have as ambient background noise.
A little bit.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I need to be a little sensitive. And so I'm almost eyeing the handheld system as, you know, I can let, Jen, my wife, watch her, you know, whatever shows or, you know, mess around on the computer. And it's a less intrusive form of gaming that is still, I hate this word, hardcore, you know?
Right. Handhelds, man. You gotta love handhelds. They're fantastic. I almost never play them out and about. Like, I never carry my DS with me, but, in bed or laying on the couch, you know, something like that.
Exactly.
Pretty much if I'm laying, you know, supine, I will be playing a DS or playing something on an iPad. So yeah. How about you, Ben?
Well, I have a question. Did you just want to say supine with that last sentence?
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
Would you prefer that I say prostrate? I mean, no, I can say that too.
No, that sounds too dirty.
It's kind of hard to play games while I'm prostrate, Ben.
Yeah. So.
Is there a technical difference between supine and prostrate?
Supine's on your back, and prostrate is on your belly, I think. Although now I think that it's kind of like flammable, inflammable. So I could be entirely wrong, but I don't want to look it up. So
here's the problem is if you're supine on your back, you're going to have tired arms because you got to hold the screen up above your head. But if you're prostrate, lying on your stomach, then you're going to have a tired neck because you got to hold it up to look at the screen. So it's kind of one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't scenarios.
Let me see here. Supine, laying on your back. Prone is laying on your stomach. Mm-hmm. Prostrate, however, that is a whole different thing. That is laying bowed. So imagine somebody on their knees kneeling with their head to the ground. That is prostrate.
Oh, like child's pose in yoga.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I don't think I've ever played a game prostrate.
No. Oh man.
That'd be an interesting experience.
Who knows?
Okay. So the thing I have on my mind, I haven't bought a full price video game in a while. So being that it's my birthday, either I'm going to receive this or I was going to probably get it for myself. But these are the games that I'm trying to decide between as for what I should get. And so I was hoping for some of your input.
Okay.
And we'll figure out what I get next week. But Resident Evil 6, Assassin's Creed 3, Hitman Absolution, or the Mass Effect trilogy.
Oh wow, man, that is hard. That's tough.
I mean, from my perspective, I'm disenfranchised with the Assassin's Creed franchise. Hitman is just kind of a foreign language to me. I never got into it.
Okay.
Same thing. Well, no, I played Resident Evil 5 though, so Resident Evil 6 is okay. And then your final one was
Mass Effect trilogy,
right? I think hours for dollars, and that's a horrible way to measure games. So I'm going to retract that right now.
Thank you.
Because I saw Cole about ready to just raise his fist and punch the microphone.
I will hang up this call, sir.
I will reach through the internet and choke slam you. No, I'd say go Mass Effect.
Okay, Cole.
Man, see, this is tough because I have difficulty recommending Resident Evil 6, given my misgivings having played it.
Okay,
you know, having played a little bit of it, I played all three Mass Effect games, and you know, Dennis is right. You know, like you're gonna have a lot of good times with those. You know, even a Mass Effect 3 does kind of have a couple of missteps if you're at all invested in that series or in that story. Which I know / imagine you are. It's cool to have all of those in one place and to be able to just, you know, power through them, to blitz through them, as I know you will do.
That's kind of some supplemental information. Is I've played the first two already.
Right.
I don't know if I can start that slog.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough because you could just buy Mass Effect 3 for like $20 and be done with it.
Yeah.
But
I don't get the continuity.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because like Mass Effect 1 plus 2 plus 3 is like so much greater than the sum of its parts.
That's like Mass Effect 6.
So wait, Ben, what you need to do, would you be open to doing like an interesting style of playthrough for 1 and 2? Like, okay, so I've beat them
before.
I'm not
going to play it like you would play it, like on the hardest
difficulty. No gun run
no
through.
No shields, yeah.
No, but I mean, like,
melee everyone to death.
Maybe the better question is, are you essentially just going to try to recreate the character that you had before, or is this truly going to be something where you let it stand on its own?
There would be negligible changes to it, yeah.
Then I'm almost like, you'd have your save game data from Mass Effect 2 and all that, right?
No, I played Mass Effect 2 on a 360. That is no longer in my possession.
Oh. Yeah, okay, I'll stick with Mass Effect. I was about to switch away, but knowing that, I'll stick with Mass Effect.
Okay.
See, okay, so Assassin's Creed and Hitman are two relatively dicey propositions because I have not played either of them. Assassin's Creed 3, for as much as it looks interesting and for as much as it looks like a really good capper to the series, to that particular story arc, and because the American Revolution is crazy interesting and, you know, I like pretty much everything about the trappings, I hear the gameplay itself ain't that great. and in certain respects. There are things about it that, like, everybody is saying are really good, you know, exploring the frontier and everything, the naval combat, the ship-to-ship combat. I hear those are really good as well.
I just imagined belly button fights. Sorry, that mental image came
naval, like, you're basically you have missions where you can be a pirate, like a privateer, like going around and like blowing holes in the sides of ships and like boarding them and going and taking all of their spices and tobacco, which is cool, right? I would say, knowing you and knowing your appreciation for the series, like, Hitman seems like the safest bet. Like, it has the best combination of, you know, novelty and known quantity, and it's a game that I haven't seen any negative press about so far.
Okay.
Except for the horribly derogatory trailer.
But, yeah.
There's that.
Where he kills the woman?
Where there's the nuns with rocket launchers.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that.
It's not where he kills the woman. It's where he kills the sex nuns in about 1,000 different ways.
Jeez.
Yeah, I just...
What was the soundtrack to that?
The body's at the floor.
Yeah, probably. Something like that.
Yeah. That's kind of gross.
It's one thing when you stumble into that and it's like, yeah, they're idiots. It's another when you look at it and go, yeah, they probably did that with the express intent of getting negative press.
Ugh, gross.
Anyway.
So that's what I would say. And I'm not just saying that because I want to hear you talk about Hitman, not Blood Money, Absolution, before I play it myself. Ulterior motives.
Okay.
Cool.
I will keep that in mind.
And then finally mine, what's on my mind right now is that I think that this new venture of ours has been incredibly successful so far. That's one level down. Any number of levels left to go. So I really hope that everybody listening has enjoyed it as much as I am listening. I hope that you guys are enjoying it as much as I am. But this is cool. This is fun. And I like it.
It's on the level. Cool. Sorry, I had to get one in.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
It begins.
Now it's time for the credits, where we talk about boring admin stuff, and we'll try and get it out of the way as quickly as possible. Right now, there's very little that you can do, so we're going to hit the basics. You can subscribe to us on Facebook. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review, any of those particular things. It's really important when a show just like first comes out to hit that as hard as you can in support of us. That gets us on the new and noteworthy, and that gets more people to pay attention. So we would sincerely appreciate it if you would rate us based on our first effort. And if you need, you know, if we piss you off, go back and change it later. But like right now, if you liked it, go tell people. Also, we have a Facebook page that is facebook.com/TheLevel Podcast, where you will find us and our, you know, kind of listener involvement. A lot of it's going to come from there, at least intentionally. If you would like to write in letters to the show, go to duckfeed.tv/contact. There's a little drop-down page letter kind of thing that where you can fill out the form, and, you know, we see that, and we will read it on the multiplayer section. So that's the way that you can get involved. We'll look into like doing a Twitter, any others like social media stuff in the future. But as for right now, that is the gamut. Otherwise, check out duckfeed.tv/TheLevel for all of the information about the show, other episodes. Keep your eyes peeled there for any details. Check out the other shows on the network if you're interested in our previous body of work, the extant episodes of Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This, our old show, are still available. So if you're curious, you can go back there and hit the backlog, as it were. If you like video game related shows, you can check out Watch Out for Fireballs. It's a retro video game show that I do with a fellow named Gary Butterfield, where we pick a game and we play it and talk about it, and we get people to write in about it. It's pretty cool. I do a show with my brother called Those Damn Ross Kids, which is pretty funny. And then we have some other stuff happening here as well. Those are the big ones. Dead Idea Valhalla, one of Gary's other shows. And then he's putting on another comedy show on the network called The Pitch. So really, there's no other place you can go. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Duck Feed gonna come get you. So
it's basically the internet.
Exactly.
It's all links lead to Duck
like
Feed.
Everything on the internet goes through us. So anyway, if you're
very aggressive podcast.
Oh God, it's spreading. It's like the map from Outbreak. We're just creeping across. Today, Cincinnati. Tomorrow, Ohio. Sunday, the world. So if you'd like to support our eventual consumption of the entire world, you can go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar, where you can find our Amazon link. If you're going to be buying things over the holidays, if you're going to buy any of the games that we're going to talk about, use our Amazon referral link. We get a little kickback. Doesn't cost you anything extra. We also have subscription options on the right side of the page there, where you can sign up for that. We really don't want you to do that. We just wanted that as an option instead of PayPal, because PayPal is literally Satan. So we're going to be doing that from now on. So don't be afraid of that. Although really just buy stuff on Amazon. That's enough for us. Anything I'm missing, fellas? That was a lot of me talking.
Stay awesome.
Yeah, do it. Cool. So anyway, I am Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am at DFuria on Twitter.
I am at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And this has been Cole Ross.
Dennis Furia.
Ben Merkel.
And I'm really happy we completed this level. Let's move on to the next one next week. Just so everybody knows, that's not an opinion that I legitimately hold.
Ben, did you know Cole's not racist? Because I totally thought he was racist.
This is like, I was listening to this show, like I saw it on, you know, social networks and stuff. Like two of the dudes are pretty cool, but the dude who talks the most, he's like wicked racist.
I'm 90% sure you're racist, Cole.
Anyway.